No, but this is the best part. So we'll play. She will not play, but she will sit next to Miles while Miles plays, and then she'll talk into his microphone. So she'll only talk to the ghost. She won't play the game.
Oh, apparently 50% of the time I'm talking and no one can hear me because he hasn't pressed the button down.
That's rude.
So it's like an unplugged controller for your sibling type deal.
It really is just for me. Yeah, yes, exactly. I'm like the younger child thinking I'm playing.
Hey.
Perfect.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Hello. So, pretty much the tradition around here is we have our guests open the podcast. So go ahead and do that for us, please. Do our job.
Oh, Ellie, excellent. This is you. You got this, Queen.
Hello, and welcome to the first podcast. Today we have Ellie and Chelsea from What? And, we're going to have a lot of fun. And joining me are, please say your names.
Incredible.
Barack
Thank
Obama.
You so much. Yeah.
I'm Amir. I'm Amir. You can call me Doplex. You can call me whatever. And Lars, say your name, even though I just did.
Hi, Amir and Lars. Welcome.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, really appreciate you guys having us on. We've been looking forward to this for a couple years now. I'm gonna need my check up front. But we can talk about that later. Let's not worry about that.
Yeah. That's fair. Honestly.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you? Who are you guys? And what do you do?
And how'd you get in my house?
Daddy Biden let me in.
Oh, he's here.
Oh, good. Oh,
he can be. He can be so quickly. You have no idea.
He's always here.
Thank God.
I'm a content creator and a podcast host from Austin.
Oh my God, she's gone.
Oh.
Oh, we lost Ellie. All right, let's move on.
Oh no. It's because she lied. When she tells a lie, she drops out. So she's not from Austin.
And that's our show.
Doing kind of a 3-minute podcast thing here. It's really experimental, but really appreciate you guys being here.
Yeah.
Ellie, can you hear us? Can you hear us? Hello.
Ah, jeez. Poor girl.
Hello?
Hi. Was that me?
Yeah, you just cut out for a minute.
Oh.
Ellie, you said you were from Austin, and then it immediately cut out because you were lying, because you're not from Austin.
Oh, wow. No, I said, as you can tell, I'm not from Austin. I'm from London.
It's true.
Oh.
Oh. I thought that was just like a really deep Texas accent.
Oh,
there she goes again.
So I'm Chelsea. I'm a podcast producer for work, and then I'm also a podcast producer and host for fun with What Pod with Ellie. Fun fact, while we're waiting for her to get her audio back, we used to work together at the same media company, and then I quit, and then she quit. And then we worked together at a new media company, and then she got laid off because of COVID. So that's the wild, fun experience of working in media in Austin is you just never know how long you're going to have your job for. That's probably true all the way around.
Yeah, you two used to work for Rooster Teeth, right?
Right. Yeah, that's actually how we met. Well, sort of. So we did a Twitch show with a bunch of people from Rooster Teeth, but after hours. Called Let's Gay.
Great name.
And what was fun about that was that we did it at Rooster Teeth with their permission, but basically because we didn't have enough viewers that they gave a shit. So we always joked that we needed to keep it low key because if it ever got to the point where it could have been monetized, I think the Rooster Teeth would have been hey, money please. But we kept it at a strong 40 people tops, and it was just fun.
Yeah.
And that's where we met. Ellie is texting me in a blind panic. Let's see. My queen. I'm wondering if she should just try to connect over her phone instead of Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that might be for the best.
Yeah. You get Discord on your phone.
You can certainly try.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there have been times in my personal gaming life that Discord was not working for me. We've been real like on a Phasmophobia kick. Have you guys played that yet?
No, I want to. I have not played it.
I keep hearing about it, but I keep getting sucked back into Among Us because like I have like a lot of content creator friends that are doing it. So it's like it's really tempting to stream with them instead right now. So I hear it's great, though.
No, I totally feel you because it is. It's like, do you have a Phasmophobia friend group or do you have an Among Us friend group? And right. Mostly my friends are playing Phasmophobia, so we've been playing more in that. But every once in a while, I get that invite to Among Us, and it is really fun.
And consistently fun, too.
Okay, so like for someone who has heard of it and is intrigued by it, but doesn't really understand what's going on with it, what's like the basic premise?
Okay, I'm so glad you asked. So
yeah, give us the box quote.
The best thing about Phasmophobia, in my opinion, is that it's just one of those games where like you're just on like a mission. So like you can literally pop in and like play it for 20 minutes or whatever and have fun, or you can play it for hours. I mean, I guess like Among Us is. So the idea is that you and whoever's in your small group, which you can play with strangers or you can play with like a private group, you're all ghost hunters and you get sent out on different missions, and the missions are randomly generated. So there's usually 4 to 5 like ghost hunting tasks that you have to complete. And then the best part is, in my opinion, the part that I really like is that there's like, I don't know, like 10 different kinds of ghosts and they all have different behaviors. So while you're doing these different tasks, you're also recording their behaviors to try to figure out what kind of ghost it is. And some of the ghosts are super chill. Like, I think one of them is just called Spirit. And like, they just don't really give it. They're like, I guess you're in my house. And then some of them are fucking horrible and will like throw things at you and break crucifixes in front of you and stuff. Like, it's really bad. And so you're watching all their behavior, trying to figure out what kind of ghost you're dealing with. And the more tasks you complete, the more money you make, and then you can buy new, better ghost hunting equipment.
Oh, so it's like a ghost adventure simulator.
Essentially, yeah. And there's a lot of like dude run, and there's a lot of you can die. The ghosts can kill you. I die a lot because I'm usually out of our friend group the only one that's brave enough to like stay in the room. There are some ghost types where you have to be alone in order for the ghost to come out, which is also really fun because then people get really freaked out. So I'll stay in the room, and then you have to say, I'm sure you guys have seen this on like TikToks or videos about it, you just say the ghost's name out loud, and that's what gets the ghost like all riled up. So you're like, oh. Mary Thompson, Mary Thompson, Mary Thompson, Mary Thompson, over and over again.
That's fucking awesome. Yeah, I think I did hear that like it listens to your mic at all times, right?
Mm-hmm. It does. So there are other things you can say too, like, do you wish to communicate? Or I guess this is anecdotal. I can't 100% confirm that this is real, but we often insult the ghost. You know, be like, oh, you're a coward. You're a little baby. You're not going to scare us. You don't even exist. We don't believe in ghosts. And that usually seems to get, you know, a rise out of them.
Just insulting the ghost.
As an update from Ellie, so she says that she can connect over her phone, but then she can't record locally. Is that okay?
Oh, I didn't think she was recording locally.
Oh, well, surprise.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
Oh my God, it's her.
Hello. Here's the problem is that if I try and record through Audition, then it quits Discord because my computer's stupid.
Oh.
Should I just not do that?
I mean, yeah, I mean, if it's just not going to work, then we got to do what we got to do. That's fine.
Okay. I appreciate you, and I'm so sorry. Also, I'm embarrassed.
It's life.
All good.
It's okay. Good.
I'm going to throw myself nearest mountain.
Oh, jeez.
I'll go with you.
That's quite a task to throw yourself off of a, not like a cliff, but like just a mountain. That's
a mountain.
That's going to be quite
I'm
a death.
I'm going to roll the full way down.
She is the outdoor kid between the both of us, so.
All good.
Okay.
No worries.
I think we're good now. Apologies in profuse note.
I know.
That's okay.
You're so British, this must be so painful for you.
Oh, you cannot imagine how much I am dying on the inside. I booked flights home. in that 5 minutes, I was like, I can't do this. I'm going back to it. It's been 6 years, but this, for some reason, this is the cherry on top of my pain.
Right.
Well, I was just telling them about Phasmophobia.
Oh, horrific. Why?
Oh, yeah. Ellie's very scared. So she won't. This is really
in
fun.
In general, just full stop.
I was trying to skip it in general. No, but this is the best part. So we'll play. She will not play, but she will sit next to Miles while Miles plays, and then she'll talk into his microphone. So she'll only talk to the ghost. She won't play the game.
Oh, apparently 50% of the time I'm talking and no one can hear me because he hasn't pressed the button down.
That's rude.
So it's like an unplugged controller for your sibling type deal.
It really is just for me. Yeah, yes, exactly. I'm like the younger child thinking I'm playing, but I'm not.
Here you go, sweetie. Have a good time.
I still do have a good time. It's very spooky.
It is. You know, it is spookier than it even has a right to, being a game that's like basically all made from free assets by like one dude.
Right.
You know, because it's still an early access. So it's like, it's very assety. It's like, you know, the controls are a little complicated. Like, my favorite thing is that there's a run and a walk, but they are the same pace. And so totally. You'll panic and you'll start like, you know, mashing down on the run button, and you're just going the same like slow ass speed with the ghost right behind you.
It's so breathing in your ear. It's so bad.
Yeah. It'll make like that grudge sound, like that.
Oh,
it's bad.
Damn. I need to play this game. I'm really big into horror games, so this sounds right up my alley.
See, I don't know. I'm not really a fan of Jank, though. Like, I might wait till that actually releases.
What is
at that
this
point.
Podcast, Lars?
Oh no! I was gonna say, you're gonna say that right in front of Ellie after all Ellie's been through.
Wow.
By the way, apparently you guys do a podcast.
We do
weekly, no doubt.
Oh. Tell us about that. We'll start off. What exactly is a podcast, and how does
one... I'm confused.
Oh, yeah,
you sound like my grandmother.
So you guys talk in the microphones, and people listen.
I was so offended. Can I tell you, Ellie? I'm gonna let you tell them the origin story, since this is really more you. But I was so offended because I like pitched podcast to my grandmother. I thought I was giving her such a gift. Because I was like, what is podcast? But basically old-time radio repackaged for a new generation. I was like, you're going to love it. All the weird people that you watch on like
radio
OWN or whatever. Yeah. They're all going to be on this podcast and you can listen to them all for free. And she was like, I won't do it. Like, it's Satan. It's not real. It's fake. It's bad.
Like,
I won't
I
do
refuse,
it.
And also, may I say, fuck you.
It was so aggressive. And I was like, but Siti, I have a podcast and I am your only grandchild. And she was like, no, I'll talk to you another way. And I was like, okay. So anyway, what's our podcast about, Ellie?
Our podcast is a podcast called What? W-U-T. And Chelsea and I and an occasional guest essentially give each other a book report. It's like part documentary, part competition, because we do score each other on how entertaining we are.
Oh.
Which varies, as you can imagine, from week to week. But we pick a topic from all time and space, and we teach each other a fun thing about the world. Usually we try and distract each other from the terrible things that are happening in real life, using history and or science. And it's tons of fun. And I often lose to Chelsea because she is much quicker and wittier and cleverer than me.
Okay.
But essentially, I've made a podcast where I get to show off my friend.
That's very sweet.
That is
Thank
very
you for
sweet.
Simping for me. However, you can't cancel 50K of my student loans like Daddy Biden, so it's not going to work.
Not yet.
Not yet. But no, it is fun because I feel like it has kind of revealed, Ellie, like what our key interests are, like as different people who are still friends. Because Ellie most weeks does sort of like a... like an Indiana Jones kind of adventure style thing where she's like, here's a woman from 1785 that like sailed across the world and also had precious gems in her teeth. And you're like, what?
A lot of gems.
And then mine are always like, here's something really fucked up that's going on right now. Here's a bad
Chelsea's
thing.
Like, here's how the criminal system is fucked. And I'm like, oh, my feeling. My heart.
I'm like,
my heart.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like you need that stark contrast, because like Lars and I, it's very much the same thing. You know, like Lars will be like, here's, I don't know, here's a listicle about how basketballs
are. I've never brought up a listicle on the show. What are you talking about?
I'm making an example of how you're very
real
like,
Lars slander.
you're very like, I don't want to say analytical, but like you bring facts, and I'm just like, Haha, poopy, stinky foreskin. Haha, laugh.
Yeah, how dare I be analytical and smart? Exactly.
So you kind of need that stark contrast, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Oh, I thought you meant like one of you is the storm cloud. So I feel like I'm the storm cloud and Ellie's like the sun ray.
Oh.
I'm just here to teach you how everything you interact with is racist. I feel like that's what all my topics boil down to. I'm like, and then in the fire department, guess what they wouldn't allow people to do?
I don't think there's any sort of like storm cloud versus non-storm cloud. I think we're both kind of pretty cheeky, pretty upbeat, but
we're both storm clouds. But we're like,
you guys need to get your story straight.
We're storm clouds that rain Capri Sun.
Sure. All right. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
Ellie and I are that scene from Parks and Rec where they're describing like their Halloween party. And Andy's like, there's going to be like candy and puppies. And then April's like, there's going to be a dead body that we murdered. Mm-hmm. Parks and Rec 2020, still relevant. I stand by that.
I got to the point with Parks and Recreation where I had to like, because I'm one of those people that I do watch a lot of shows when I have the time, which is never. But I tend to gravitate back towards the same stuff over and over and over again. And Parks and Rec, I had to like make a deal with myself, like stop it, like stop watching this over and over again, because it's like it's so easy to fall right back into that hole. I don't know why. Why is it with shows? It's so easy to forgo all other entertainment and watch the exact same show 111 times in a row. I don't understand.
That's how I was with The Office for like a solid 2 years.
Same. I feel like you get like security content. You know what I mean? Like I think that that's like a newer, like emerging behavior in sort of the streaming age, is you have content that you consume in a storytelling sense, and then you have security content that is just like almost like a form of self-care.
Comfort content.
Yeah, comfort content. Because I do the same thing. Also, I mean, not to be like, you know, not to pander, but Community is one of those for me as well.
Yeah.
I rewatch that a lot. Well, certain seasons.
Community is one of those shows where it's like, it's, it has, it's like 80% there towards like having mainstream appeal. So it stays just below the surface. And I kind of like it there. Like that's a good spot for it. Because it feels like, I'm obviously deluding myself by saying this, but like it feels like I'm participating in something that's just a little bit unique or original of a viewing experience, even though I'm obviously not. And it was like heavily promoted by the networks and stuff. But,
right. No, yeah. I feel you. So like TikTok teens have already hurt my feelings by making fun of me for loving The Office. Like they've already honed in on that as like a millennial trait where they're like, oh, right. You're a millennial. And like, you like live with roommates and you watch The Office. And I'm like, fuck. And I've never seen a TikTok teen make fun of a millennial for watching Community. So I think you might be onto something.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think sometimes you want that theater of I'm the only one that's watching this and like gets to enjoy it, even though you know it's not true. You want that experience of like, this is just for me right now.
Yeah.
Ellie, can you pass along the tweet for this, by the way?
Yes, of course.
It's in the recording chat.
Most assuredly.
I also retweeted it, Ellie, because I follow rules.
But Chelsea did it.
No! And, I'm clearly very bad at this, okay?
Okay.
I'm doing my best. I'm old and I'm tired.
It's okay. I'm pretty sure all of us are old and tired.
Yeah, I think we're pretty much in the same age bracket.
I think
that's
so.
That's fun. I love that for us. Wow. Yeah. Have you two had your feelings hurt by a TikTok teen?
No, but I guess in a way, yeah.
Uh-huh, go on.
Yeah, just TikTok teens in general.
Yeah.
Just the existence of them.
Just the fact that they're there and they're saying stuff.
Yeah, it hurts my feelings.
I feel that. I got my...
In general,
I don't like it. Well, I was able to... So my roommate is like a younger... Is slightly younger than, I think, us, but definitely me. She's 22.
And, I'm confused by that.
Why?
I'm like, do you know her?
Okay. All right. So she's 22 and she does make fun of me and my boyfriend, who is also like almost 30. And she's like, ha ha ha. Like y'all are, you know, you're going to die and I'm never going to die because I'm 22. And I'm like, you'll just see. And then I found this TikTok and I sent it to her and it was like a teenager in their car. And they were like, okay, so this TikTok is for all the older people on TikTok. So that's like people born like the late 90s, early 2000s. I just watched the light like leave her eyes. And I was like, that's right. It happens to everyone.
I think we all have that same realization, especially when it comes to like online media, where we're just like, oh man, this fucking 8-year-old is flossing on the internet and is so much cooler than I am.
Yeah.
I'm officially a boomer.
Well, I think something that helped me deal with it early on was like when I very first started making content on the internet, I was actually making kids content. And so, because that was the first thing that I was asked to do.
Right.
And I was doing it with this little girl that I used to nanny, who I don't nanny anymore because she's a TikTok teen now. But she she was like,
it's come real circle because she's now making fun of you.
It's really come real circle for all of us. But she was 8, like when we started making these videos for Rooster Teeth together, and she was immediately more popular than I was, which made total sense because one, she was the child of one of the founders of Rooster Teeth. And yeah. 2, she was the core. She was the same age as the people for whom we were trying to make content for. So I had to really like face that really early, and I think that has helped me as I've continued to make content.
Actually, I don't know if I mentioned this or not, but I actually work for Rooster Teeth.
Wait, who works for Rooster Teeth?
I do. I work for Inside Gaming and Funhouse.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, I would consider that adjacent. In the best
she means
way,
that,
in a good
she
way.
Means that in a nice way.
Yeah.
In the best way.
Yeah, I'm on that side of things. I think I should have started with that we're all kind of in that same bubble, except for Lars.
Yeah.
It's okay, I was Rooster Teeth adjacent for a long time because I did contract. I worked like contract for them without stopping for like 4 years.
Right.
Yeah, I was almost worried that like this would be kind of awkward because it's like the old meets the new, but I guess it's fine. Also, wanted to talk about something, which was you mentioned someone being more popular than you, and this is something that I've been thinking about a lot because it's somewhat of a serious topic, but let's get into it. It's really easy to look online and you look at your presence as a content creator and you inevitably end up comparing yourself and you look at your numbers of subscribers, you look at your number of followers and how your videos are doing or how your podcast is doing. And it's like, you try not to, but it's inevitable that you're going to look at someone who has achieved some more level of success than you. And my question, I guess, for the podcast, just all three of you, is how do you guys deal with that and cope with that?
Ellie, do you want to go first?
I don't. Every day is a struggle.
Sorry. Oh.
Hey, no, I'm here.
Oh?
Hello?
Hello? I'm so sorry. Hi.
No, you're
sorry,
fine.
Can you repeat the question?
Oh, boy.
Ellie, how does it feel when people have more followers than you? The question was a lot more nuanced than that, but... we can start there.
Well, let me give it a little bit more nuance.
What happens after we die?
Well, it's just like, how do you handle the fact that you're going to inevitably compare yourself to other people in terms of like how their success is going versus yours?
No, I think that's a great question.
I'm constantly comparing myself to Ryan's toy reviews.
I think that's a really good question. And I think that is a specific, I think anyone who's been involved with something, with Rooster Teeth especially, or with something like it, has to confront that at some point. So I don't think it's an indelicate question at all. It sounds really cliche, but it's very true that comparison is a thief of joy in that aspect. If you continually compare yourself to everyone else that's in your space, be that people that you work with or people that you admire or any of that, then it's going to make you miserable and you're not going to want to create content. You're not going to find any joy in it. You're just going to be continually comparing yourself with other people. And the thing is that it's never going to be equal, you know, especially in with something that it's a company, right? It's not It's not just a community. It's a company. It gets paid. It's a business. It's trying to make money. And so it's going to capitalize on certain people and certain people's appeal. And so really, if you set yourself up to fail, if you act from a place of comparison. And I think really what, especially with what Chelsea and I have really enjoyed just making something that we enjoy making. And of course, we enjoy fostering the community of it and we enjoy building it. But it's not from the same place that we've tried to build things at Rooster Teeth. It's something that's just for us. And so it feels different. I just think that you are naturally going to compare yourself with people. But it's something that you have to recognize that you're doing and kind of fight against in your own psyche. Difficult though that is. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's just something that's been on my mind recently. So what we did for most of the episodes of the show is we just had them on audio platforms. Like, we didn't put them up anywhere. And so it was like, I could compare listen counts, I guess, in some cases, because like some other podcasts post their listens, a lot don't though. And then, you know, when Doplex jumped on board, we decided to put the show on YouTube. And now I'm like very aware of how the show is going compared to other creators. Like, I see the subscriber counts, the view counts, and I'm like looking at all my other content creator friends, seeing how they're doing. So it's just been like something that's been in my head.
I think you just totally hit on something that I think about a lot when it comes to podcasting. Cause now, like I said, I'm a podcast producer for work as well as like doing, you know, What with Ellie and all this other stuff. And before that, I was a video producer, and specifically I was doing video production at Rooster Teeth. So we were doing primarily like stuff that was going to go to YouTube. Right. And I remember, you know, like one of the last things that I made there was Skilltree with Ellie, which we like, that was our baby. Like we worked for months to develop that concept. We begged everyone for money for like, we had so many different pitch meetings where we were like, at one point I was like, I will do this for $10,000, which like for Rooster Teeth was like their like drink nothing. Budget where like they don't make anything that's like, you know, $10,000, whatever. So I was like, I will do this for no money. Like, I don't care. Like, just please just say yes. And like, we will find a way to make it work. And they finally said that we could do it.
It's going to be good.
And yeah, they finally said that we could do it. We worked really hard on it and I was so proud of it, and it went up. And I mean, I'm not saying the numbers were bad. The numbers were good. The numbers were at like kind of like the level that everything else at that time was sort of doing on YouTube for us. But the minute that it came out on YouTube and there were numbers, that's the only thing I could think of anymore. I never again thought about, do I think this episode is working or not working? Are people liking it or not liking it? It was just about that number and like whether it was going up. And whether it was going up enough. Yeah. And it was depressing. And it like it depressed me. I mean, I had no one to blame but myself, but I also felt like completely chained to this number. Mm-hmm. And something that, and part of it was because it was public. It was because I knew that everyone else around me knew that number. And I knew that everybody that I was working with knew that number. And there's something about podcasting that I feel is really freeing, because they don't, like, nobody gives out subscriber numbers. And then the listen numbers, you only have that for yourself, and it's your choice whether or not you publish it. And I feel like there's just something really freeing about the anonymity of podcasting as a platform. And I think people are honestly more apt to give stuff a chance because they don't, there's not this sort of like underlying social pressure. I mean, obviously, like, you know, there are shows like, I don't know, like Joe Rogan Experience or something that like everyone knows that everyone listens to. Not saying that I do, but I'm just saying like a number one podcast like that. But other than that, when you get below that level, it's just content and you really do pick and choose what feels the most interesting to you. I don't, maybe that's overly optimistic, but that's kind of been my feeling about it.
Well, and I think for me, especially with this year and having left Rooster Teeth last year and trying to explore things that I want to do, this is the fact that I have complete, like, Chelsea and I have complete creative agency over what, there's no one telling us what we can and can't do. And so, and therefore it's far more enjoyable. And I always, like, when I do get into a funk of like, well, maybe this, you know, maybe if we had the support of a big company behind us, this would be doing X, Y, or Z, you know, be doing different. I always have to rest back on the fact that I am so much happier now as a creator, us doing this by ourselves. I get so much more joy from it. I want to do it every week. And I think that's really, really important. I would much rather be in this position and having be building our podcast and like trying to find ways for it to be successful than be unhappy slaving away at something I don't want to do.
Okay. Because while I totally agree with what you just said, it's interesting because I've also kind of found myself having the opposite experience, because although I have had some anxiety with this, mm-hmm. it's also been kind of exciting to kind of for the first time actually play the game with this kind of stuff, like to mm-hmm. actually have a just like the, even the tiniest of presence on YouTube and see that number grow pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot of fun. Yeah.
Well, it always feels good when it's growing, but yeah. I'm really happy for you that it is growing. But no, I mean, I think I know what you mean. Like that's one of the things I think I like about the culture of Twitch. Because Twitch, the numbers are visible, like on YouTube. Right. But I feel like maybe because it's a newer platform, or it was like a platform that really got taken over by creators who had a professional mind to it. Whereas like YouTube was around for long enough that there was a lot of people who kind of got big on accident and then had to figure out how to make it a professional thing after the fact. Twitch was like, this is what I want to do. And here's this platform. And there's so much of an accepted culture of like, you know, like subscriber counts, right? Of just like, hey, we want to do something for 50, 100, 500, 1,000. Hey, we're going to do like these specific types of content at these times to celebrate these milestones. And everybody gets into it and the community gets into it. The community has like this sort of level of savviness where they're like, yes, I want my favorite creator to get to 500 subscribers because I want this thing or I want this level of success for them. And I think that maybe is what gives me that same vibe that you're talking about, that kind of gaming the system where I'm like, okay, if we can just, we're averaging like 3 subscribers, you know, per hour. And if we could get 7, then we're going to have this number. And then by next week, we'll have this number. And it just feels it, you know, it's like a serotonin button.
Yeah. And I don't want to say, cause like I've talked to many, many creators about this, and I don't want to present myself as being like naive towards the realities that number also goes down instead of just up. And that's also like something I need to anticipate for the future. Cause like, obviously, you know, you have your growth, but then you have your plateaus where you don't really rise above that. You have the times when maybe there was like a controversy or someone like misinterpreted what you said and you lose subscribers or people get tired of your mm-hmm. content. And so there's like, different ways to go. And so I'm like also preparing myself for that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting. I think a couple of months after I had left Rooster Teeth, I remember I texted Chelsea saying, hey, I'm upset about something that I know that I shouldn't care about, but I do. And she was like, what is it? And I was like, I've lost a bunch of followers on social media since I've left Rooster Teeth. And there was a part of me that was like, God, that's just like so embarrassing. And like, it's just like, there's something that I know that.
Oh no, this was a good one.
There she goes.
Oh man. I was invested.
I know. It really it's a good story.
No.
Hold on. I'm sure she'll be back in a second.
I can try to finish her story. I think what she was trying to say was that after that happened, she was in such a rage that she, Lars, what happens next?
They got married and lived happily ever after. And that's the end.
Oh my God, you weren't supposed to tell that we were married.
Oh. Ellie, guys. you just cut out for quite a while.
You cut out right when you said that you were so embarrassed that it was something that you cared about. if you want to jump back in,
I'm so sorry. I was saying that I messaged Chelsea because I figured out a few months after I left Rooster Teeth that I'd lost a ton of followers, and I felt personally like upset by it, and so I like had to kind of work that through and be like, okay, well, it's okay to have an emotional reaction about anything. And also, it's okay. Most of these people that were following me were because they follow Rooster Teeth and they're interested in everything that Rooster Teeth does and people who work for them. And I don't work for them anymore. So it makes sense. But it did take me a while to kind of get over that and to not think of it as something personal, even though like it is so impersonal because we're talking about like, you know, a great deal amount of people. But it's very difficult to kind of pass that, if that makes sense.
It does feel personal, though, because, and I think this is, and I'm super interested to hear what you guys think about this, too. the unique thing about the kind of content that we all do is that it's personality based, right? Like, we're not writing a short story and sharing it, where there's at least like one level of removal of like, well, maybe you don't like this kind of story. It's you. And I mean, I had the same thing. Like, when I stopped making content with Rooster Teeth, I lost some followers for sure. Like, when I removed that stuff from my bio and everything. And I had to keep reminding myself that it wasn't personal, because it's so hard to take it as anything but personal, because the content is me being myself, you know? Do you guys feel that way ever?
I think I know what you mean. I mean, for me, it's a little bit different, just because I still do make stuff for like my own channel before I joined Rooster Teeth. And it just kind of became this whole thing of like, well, I'm just going to be in the background. I'm just going to be an editor. But like, there are times where I would be like a little bit more front facing, just with like podcasting for them, or, you know, like live streams or whatever they do. Like, I'll host sometimes. And even though I wanted to keep it separate, you know, it's kind of hard to do that. Obviously, you're on their payroll, so if they tell you to do something, you're going to do it. But I mean, I'm still with the company, so I haven't experienced if anybody would leave, like if anyone would just be like, all right, I don't care about you anymore. If anything, I've had a few people actually like kind of come over and enjoy my personal stuff from doing it. But then again, you know, you two are speaking more so from like a past tense perspective.
Right. Well, have you ever had somebody like unfollow you?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. All the time. Every single day.
Never. Not one time.
Yeah. I mean, if I tweet a picture of like, Ronald McDonald with blood coming out of his eyes, you know, and if somebody unfollows, I'm not going to, yeah, I can't blame them at that point.
Right. Well, yeah, no, I mean, I understand what you mean. And I, you know, I think that you kind of hit on something that's like sort of unique, maybe not unique only to Rooster Teeth, but definitely unique to kind of like the niche that Rooster Teeth lives in, which is that if you work there at all, even if you are not necessarily like, you know, on camera, there is a certain subset of people who will find like your personal stuff, which can feel really cool, right? Like, you know, because if you're out there making personal content, and people find you, it doesn't really matter how they find you. You're excited that they want to engage with it. And I do, and I'm not saying anything bad about that whole dynamic, because I think that for the vast majority of people, it's a very like good faith thing, right? Like, they like this thing, Rooster Teeth. They're like, oh, I want to know who works there and what they do. And then they find more stuff that they like. That is how, honestly, you know, I'm not naive. Like, most of the people who listen to What know about us because we worked at Rooster Teeth, or know about Ellie because she worked at Rooster Teeth, right? And then now they like What. So there is like a pathway there for sure. And then I think that's why, like, when Ellie called me that day and she was, you know, I feel upset about this and I'm embarrassed about it, I was like, well, you have to think about it as kind of like a whittling down, because like, yes, some of those people left because they were only really interested in sort of collecting the group of Rooster Teeth people. And you're not one of those people anymore. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But the people who stayed, which is a much bigger number, are still interested in what you're going to do next.
That's true. Yeah, totally. I agree with that. And I think too, I mean, I guess maybe you two can answer this, but do you think like the type of content you're making now is like would still appeal to a fan of Rooster Teeth? Because I feel like, you know, like someone like me, right? It was a huge jump, like making like, I guess, somewhat edgier content that maybe, you know, like a big media conglomerate might not be cool with. And then kind of like transferring to that, and then sort of having to like clean up my personal content a little bit. Like, do you feel like that kind of carried over for you too? Like, do you think maybe, I don't know, like you guys feel like you have to?
I can absolutely answer this question for you. And here's why. Okay. So... Yes. The short answer is yes. The longer answer is, the weird thing for me was, like I said earlier, which I don't know if this part's going to be in the podcast or not, but earlier I was talking about how, you know, I worked for Rooster Teeth and now I work for a new media company, which I'm not going to say the name of on the podcast, but it's very easy to find. It is in my Twitter bio and it's on my LinkedIn and stuff like that. And they have a very different vibe. And they have also a very different type of community with a different demographic. And I struggled for a long time about, should I even put this in my Twitter profile or on my social media? because not only am I not sure, not only do I not think that there's going to be crossover, like I don't think that these people who listen to this content that I make for work would like my personal content because it's a little bit more edgy and a lot more blue, but also they might actually get mad because it's so far different from what from what I do at work.
Well, because we were both working at that company. We were both working at a company that Chelsea works at now when we launched What, and we both, we sat down and had a conversation.
No.
No, not again.
We did have a conversation. I'm just going to jump in. We had a conversation about whether or not... Okay, go ahead, Ellie.
No, just saying, like, yeah, it was a completely different vibe from the place that we started working at. I do think that there was definitely crossover with... I personally think that people who like Rooster Teeth were like What? Because I think that it falls very much into celebrating internet culture and also celebrating the idea of like having a ton of fun while doing something silly that also kind of has a good heart to it, has a good point to it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was interesting trying to navigate this new place that we were working with this idea and figuring out like how do we keep going with this and like try and get support from it for the people that we now work with, knowing that it's not their thing, you know, in the same way that it's like,
right,
not my grandma's thing because we swear.
Right. I mean, I think the thing was that was weird was that Rooster Teeth, you know, does really encourage everybody that works there to be creative, whether that's like at the company or outside of the company. And maybe if you do something outside of the company, it might become part of the company. And this new place, they have a similar vibe in the sense that they're like, oh, you should always have your own projects. And, you know, there is a level, it's not the same, but there is a level of fans of that community finding out who works at the company and following them and, you know, talking about kind of like their personal lives or their personal projects. So I was like, oh, that's what I was like. I don't know if I want to make this connection. Ultimately, I did, because like I said, I'm a podcast producer and sometimes I use my Twitter to reach out to potential guests and stuff like that. But there was a lot of fear about it because it felt really weird. And it then therefore retroactively made me feel almost kind of nostalgic for the sort of Rooster Teeth vibe of like, I don't know, kind of feels like in high school when everybody's still really excited to make stuff for free.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you can just find people who are excited to make stuff.
At Rooster Teeth, even when you're making stuff in your own time, the vibe is very much just like, as long as you're having fun and it's not hurting anyone, then it's good. And I think that was like a really, really positive thing about working in that atmosphere, that was like the acknowledgement that whatever you make, as long as you're enjoying it, that probably means that other people will enjoy it too. So if you're having fun and you're not upsetting anyone and like, you know, you're not being a dick basically, then it's good. It's a good thing to put out into the world because you are going to be entertaining people and people need entertaining. And I think that's a really important thing. And so, you know, me personally, I think one of the main reasons that I don't work there anymore is that my comedy and the things that I find funny and the things that I want to do didn't always match up. And I eventually felt that I would be better off and working somewhere else or doing things under my own stead. So whilst I think that there was definitely some crossover, there's crossover in terms of likability with What and people who like Rooster Teeth, that's, yeah, I think I was also, it was the right thing to move on and not do this with Rooster Teeth, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. I was going to ask, like, in terms of like ET leaving, was that like the main driving force, was just like creative differences?
For me, yeah, definitely. I'd been working there for about 4 years and I'd been really lucky to do some really, really freaking cool things, you know. I got to jump out of a helicopter and I got to go to sniper school and I did a ton of amazing shit with Bernie. That was like, you know, that I can't ever, would never, ever, ever, I'll never be able to do that again. It was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I was watching some of that Skilltree stuff. That stuff looked insane.
Yeah. Yeah, it was incredible. It was such a cool and fun time. But at the end of the day, I want to write and direct television. Is the thing I really want to do. I want to write and direct comedy. And we just didn't have the same comedy voice. And after being told no over and over and over again, and I kind of got to the place of like, you know, well, actually, I do want to make stuff with my voice. I do want to make stuff in the thing in the tone that I find funny. And so I'm going to go and do that. And it was very, much a respectful, thank you so much.
And thanks for all the fish, I think. Was the end of that.
I thought that was me. I thought I dropped out, but I'm like, wait, no, Ellie was talking.
No. It was different for me. It was that at that time, like I had been doing, you know,
but at the end of the day, it's a job. And there are some parts of a job that always suck. That's just what it's like to have a job.
That's fair. So,
yeah, it's not absolutely perfect, as you can imagine. So I was excited. Because I was able to do something different at the same time. Extremely, extremely grateful for everything I got to do while I was there. But with creative differences are definitely a very nice way to distill the reason why I felt like it was time to go.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine was a lot simpler. I had been a contract producer for, like I said, for like 4 years at that point, and I really was looking for a full-time position, and they, right when Skilltree ended and that like contract ended, they had like a total reorganization of how they did all live action, and they were not hiring producers and were not going to be hiring producers. I don't think they ever have again. So that was primarily the reason, was just, again, like it was like a really happy thing. It was like a bit of a bittersweet thing. But it was just like, I have to find somewhere that is going to employ me full time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, like, cause I mean, you know, for me, right, like it being just a general content creator for a long ass time,
general and then content
like
creator?
Sort of being able to do it for a living, but it still feels like very much like just working for a company, right? Like, because I mean, it is a media conglomerate. It's definitely a good starting point for people who want to work in like this industry. Just like, you know, even if you're, I don't know, like your passion is comedy or editing or fucking, you know, writing, like whatever it is, I feel like working for a big media conglomerate like that, despite what a lot of people think, you know, like, oh, it's, you're selling out, you know, they're all in it for the money. Like, I get that way of thinking, but like at the same time, like for the individual, it's like, you can go there, you can like learn a shit ton of skills. And not only that, but you have like this big thing on your resume, and like you learn so much that you can kind of like apply it to anything, you know, like you two, you know, obviously you guys are doing your own thing, you both have like similar backgrounds, so I don't know, it's just one of those things, it's just like a good jumping off point, if anything.
I think you're totally right. I think there is sometimes this tendency, especially like in when you're more like in it, like in the sort of insular nature of Rooster Teeth, that is a byproduct of kind of how the company started, where, you know, like if you're still sort of in this vibe of like everybody's friends and they're just best friends hanging out and they're definitely not employees of a company with hundreds of people in it, then you also get this idea that outside of Rooster Teeth in like the greater media landscape, that people would be like, oh wow, you just like worked for a YouTube company or like you worked for a YouTube channel, something like that. And that's not it at all. Like it is, I mean, it's owned by Warner Media. There have been even jobs I haven't gotten, when I've gotten like a phone call or a sit down interview, they will always bring up like, oh, you worked at Rooster Teeth. That's really cool. Oh, you did Skilltree. That's cool. Also something that people don't know about Rooster Teeth as much, but like they do a lot of like contracting out for bigger brands. And I did a lot of content like that for them. So even though it's not even something that necessarily like Rooster Teeth fans would know about, like I did videos for like DreamWorks and Powerpuff Girls and all this other stuff and like Kung Fu Panda. Yeah. While I was working for Rooster Teeth, they just used me as their producer to do that. And now I get to put that on my resume forever.
And there's also, I think that there's this kind of idea that if you want to work in the content creation industry, whether that be film or web-based or anything, then you have to have these aspirations of like, I want to be the next, I don't know, the next Steven Spielberg or like whatever. I want to like change the face of media.
I want to be the next JoJo Siwa.
It's actually also totally okay to want to be part of a beautiful media company and to do that. Like, I think that we get this idea that in order to be worth something, you have to want much, 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 much more than working at a really cool, powerful, good company. Like, that's okay too. You don't have to want more than that, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
I think that we're conditioned, especially within this industry, to think that if you don't want to be the next Oscar-winning director, then the things that you do want are worthless. And it's just not true. I think that there is, like, I, to be honest, sometimes I wish that I wanted less than I do want, because I feel like I feel like my whole freaking psyche would be easy to deal with, but it's not.
I feel that.
Like, I there's an amazing YouTube video about how there are like 20% of people who feel absolutely completely satisfied by quote unquote ordinary, and broke my heart because like, oh my god, why am I one of those people?
Yeah, it's tricky because there's this new thing. We've talked a lot about this on the podcast over the probably the last 6 months in particular, which is that it's one of those weird things in content creation where you kind of, there's this threshold that you can cross eventually for some people, obviously. Right. not everyone, but it's like you want to be a content creator, and then for most people it's like they want to be a content creator full time, and that's mm-hmm. That's, I think that's kind of the cause of a lot of people to have these really high expectations and desires mm-hmm. for where they're going to go with it, because it's like, it's hard to really do it halfway, because then you have to maintain your job while you're doing it.
Yeah.
And it's like you get to a point where if you could devote 40 hours a week to your content, it would be great, but it's just most people will never get there.
Yeah. Something that blew my mind yesterday, I was listening to a lady called Kat Candler, who is a TV director. She used to teach at UT, and so Max Krumke, friend of ours who also used to work for Rooster Teeth, told me about this YouTube thing that she was doing yesterday. And it was like an hour and a half interview where she was talking about the films that she'd made and going to Sundance and all of the work that she'd done that was super, super cool. The thing that she said that absolutely will probably stick with me forever was that when her feature debuted at Sundance, she thought like, okay, I don't have to hustle anymore. Like, people are going to call me. I've got representation. I never have to do the really, really hard work of making myself be seen. And she's like, that's just not true. She's like, I'm in my 50s now, and I still every day have to hustle to get people to see my work and to work on the things that I really want to do. Like, that work never, never stops. And so please don't think that at any point that you quote unquote made it, and that mm-hmm. you get to like sit back and just enjoy the calls coming in. Like, it never happens that way. And I was like, fuck. Because just like hearing someone who is like doing it and has been doing it for 30 years plus saying, don't, like, you never stop. Like, you never stop having to prove yourself. You never stop having to do the work that it takes to make the stuff that you really want to make. Like, you never operate from the idea that at some point you can sit back and just wait for the calls. It's not going to happen. And I was like, that is good to fucking know, because I think naively, I have been definitely operating under that idea of like, Chelsea and I have written a pilot that we love, that we're really proud of, that we're going to make. And I've been working with Christina Parrish on a comedy show that I want to make, and I want to direct it. And there is this idea of like, if I get one thing, if one thing is successful, if I make one thing, if someone listens to one of the things that I've made, if someone watches it and likes it, then I'm good. I've made it, and my career will just sort of, you know, it'll get its own legs and it'll start rolling. Not true. Never true. And I think that is, that's a lesson I'm going to take with me forever, just to know that actually that point of feeling like you're at the beginning, it continues forever.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I think that's especially, like, I think that's more true now than it's ever been, because, mm-hmm. and I'm about to do, like, a disgusting name drop, and so, like, I apologize to everybody in advance, but For my job, we were interviewing Ninja, and he was talking about this.
Oh, look at Chelsea here, name dropping Ninja. So cool.
Ninja
from Fortnite.
Oh my god, amazing.
Ninja from gaming.
Do you know
Travis Scott
noted
from McDonald's?
Gamer Ninja.
She's a real girl gamer.
It's true. it was 150% my idea to have Ninja on the show, and almost everybody that I worked with, their response was, who's Ninja? And I was like, oh, I'm really not at Rooster Teeth anymore.
Is he a real ninja?
They were like, why are we having a ninja on the show? And I was like, okay.
Wait,
oh,
are you
boy.
Sure they weren't fucking with you at that point?
No, but they really weren't.
So we had Ninja on the show, and we were talking about the same thing, and he was talking about how, you know, that he has like millions of followers or subscribers or, you know, some combination thereof, but that most people don't know who he is. And that is now true of basically all celebrities, that you have like 20 celebrities that are just like are at the point where like they've just reached like peak saturation in media, like The Rock or Taylor Swift or whatever. But now media is so democratized and it's so flat across every possible platform that
every possible age.
You can love something so much and it can take your whole life and everyone you know can be obsessed with it too. And then still, if you walk outside your house 5 steps, no one knows what the fuck you're talking about. Like that's that so was true in the 70s.
Yeah, that was always my experience working with Rooster Teeth. It was like, either people were like, oh my God, you work at Rooster Teeth. Or it was like, what is that?
What is that? I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
And I think that's true with I think that's true. Like even in film and like more traditional media, because there are more platforms. Again, like you could have the biggest movie on Netflix, and so-and-so is, who doesn't have a Netflix subscription, has never heard of that movie and does not know who you are.
Yeah. Maybe,
that's true.
Like, just, like, assigning a kind of a value to that, maybe that's a good thing? Like, maybe it's good that not, like,
is.
Yeah, if I was, like, an actor, I wouldn't necessarily want everyone to know who I was, because then it's like, I could never live my life.
Yeah, like Crazy Frog.
Yeah, you want to be in that sea of sweet spot where you have, like, a cool wig, and then you can just take it off and go do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Crazy Frog does that when he leaves his house on his motorcycle?
Like he actually puts on pants so like no one can see his penis. Yeah, makes sense.
Because he's such a big celebrity.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yes.
So ideal. I want to turn things around a little bit. I feel like we've been on the same discussion for a little while. It's a great, great discussion, but I do want to kind of get a little bit more serious here. Can either of you do a kickflip?
Like on a skateboard?
Yeah, a skateboard, a piece of cardboard, whatever.
On a tech deck?
I can do one on the little, like a tech deck, I was going to say.
On a tech deck,
I've been
absolutely.
Playing with my tech deck this entire time. I mean, I have to actually let you guys know that while we're recording this, I am also exploring my boyfriend's childhood bedroom. And it's just a journey. There's a lot of Lego. There are some tech decks which I have.
There are.
Like I've been. Yeah, there are. There's the Adventure Bible, and then there's like a Pizza Fraction Fun Junior set. So
embarrassing. Oh. Are there any like stiff socks? Does the bedspread crackle?
There are no crispy socks, but there is a file of facts that's Captain America themed, and that's been amusing me for a while. It's and then a lot of like embroidered pillows. I don't know what's going on with that. I think maybe this is like a bedroom that's like in transition from childhood room to guest room. You know, that kind of bedroom.
Yeah.
The embroidered pillows are always a dead giveaway.
Yeah, like the parents are sneaking in some chintz, sneaking in some embroidery. They're like, this is still your room. Don't worry, babe. Like, this is still your room. Whenever you come home, baby, this is still your room. But also, how about a Yankee Candle?
How do you know that's not just Miles Yankee Candle?
Yeah.
Because I guarantee you he does not know what that is.
Oh. There's like a bowl of seashells.
I feel like a podcast from Miles in a childhood room is quite an interesting little topic here.
That's the new name for this podcast.
Oh, good. Miles Luna Childhood Room. Well, good, because that sets up my next anecdote, which is that I think my favorite anecdote from Miles about his childhood home was that we really bonded over like the shared like early mid 2000s experience of the computer room and like being a teenager where the computer was in a separate room and trying to figure out how to look at porn on like the shared family computer room.
The computer had capital letters.
Yeah. And just like knowing enough to know that your parents could see what you did on the internet, but like I didn't really know how they did that. Like I didn't know how to delete history.
Oh, I did.
So I would just try to come up with like a plausible like string of searches that would inevitably lead to porn. But then if like I was asked about it, I could be like, well, no, I was just looking up Girls in Love because I'm writing a fan fiction.
Girls
and I wanted
in
like
love.
A cover art.
You played your own like Wikipedia game with yourself?
Yes. So that there would be like a trail of just like girls cover art, girls having fun, girls smiling, girls in love. and then like,
oh,
and then I'd be like, no, Post magazines.
Yeah.
Which is maybe like a childhood, like, hang on, let me see the date on this. Because it might be like a childhood replacement for the computer room. You know what I'm, oh no, hang on, this is 2020.
Oh, I see.
Recent. So this is part of a guest room.
Why did you think that would have pornography in it?
Well, because there's a sexy lady playing poker on the front.
Oh.
It's very pornographic.
Yeah.
Easy living, Texas golf style.
I'm sure there are plenty. I'm sure there are plenty of dudes who can get off to that.
Sure.
Let me see.
You get desperate enough.
By the way, I have a story that I've always kind of wanted to tell, and you guys with the computer room discussion, you guys just actually opened the door to this, because this is
hell yeah, dude.
This is a weird experience I had as a kid, and it's a glitch in the Matrix story. Are you guys familiar with those?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. I just want to say. I am a skeptic. I am someone who considers myself rational, which is silly, but this is the one thing I can't explain, which is that, okay, so to give credit to them now, they've lightened up a lot, but my parents used to be like really hardline conservatives when I was a kid.
Always fun for a child.
My mom was an atheist.
Yeah. And so they, at one point when I think I was like 13 or something, when they left the house, they would take the wireless adapter out of the computer room so that internet couldn't be used.
Holy shit, dude.
Yeah. Like I said,
that's a lot.
Like I said, they've come a long way since then. I'll just put it
that way. You're allowed to use the internet at their house now?
Yeah. No, but
are you making up for lost time?
Yeah, it was really weird, by the way. So what ended up happening is they were like, now we're going to take the adapter away, so you can't go on MySpace. And
you're like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, and I swear to God, the internet kept working, and I searched for like an hour on the computer to see why. Like, I looked to see if there's like a wireless card or something, or like an adapter in there somewhere, and there was no physical means to browse the internet. And I was still browsing the internet. And I thought to myself, okay, so
Jesus was behind you guiding the mouse and keyboard.
Sounds like a watchdog situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where they're like, we'll tell him that the internet's not working, and then if he tries to use we get to see what happened.
So there's three scenarios that I've kind of devised as to how that could have happened. Number one, which I swear is not the case, but I guess logically it must be, is that I overlooked something as a kid. Like, I was a techie kid, but I guess I must have. My second explanation is that was the glitch in the aforementioned Matrix where, like, there's no actual need for a wireless card. It's just that they forgot to set it up that way for that day. And number three is that my life is actually a sequel to The Truman Show and everything is a lie.
Number four is that I'm not real, and none of this is real. We're all egg. I feel like they lied to you, and they just wanted to be able to check that history.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you haven't given an exact time frame, but like my memory of internet when I was in high school was that it was maybe complicated enough, especially for people in their 40s. Again, I'm just making a lot of assumptions about your life and your parents, that they really wouldn't want to go through the effort of doing that every time. That like they did it once, and then they saw that you didn't get on the internet, and then they were like, well, he believes us. He's so analytical. He'll never try again.
That's the most reasonable. I think that's the most reasonable explanation.
Yeah.
It makes the most sense.
I like the idea that I'm in a sequel to The Truman Show. I think that'd be interesting.
I mean, that one is fun.
It's fun, but it's not
also
real.
Also terrifying, though. What a horrifying existence. Don't you think? Like, imagine if you're just like, I'm going to go on a walk, and then you, like, hit a giant painted wall. Very upsetting. Yeah. Quite defining for the rest of your life.
I don't know if this reveals something, like, incredibly damaged about my psyche, but I actually find The Truman Show to be, like, a comforting scenario. Like, the idea that everyone would... What?
Is it because everyone's watching the show of your life?
Yeah, everyone is obsessed with me. And also everyone in my life is catering exactly to whatever my storyline is at all times.
Right.
Right. Sure. Oh, my God. I have just...
So just raging narcissism, in other words. Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
I mean...
No, but I think it'd be interesting. I've always thought like there's a part of me that like, if it turns out that life was set up for me and I had like a smoking hot wife and life was good and I had a decent job, maybe that would be the worst. Like if I discovered that, I'd be like, all
right. Right. Like you found that's out what the Truman Show was real. Yeah. That's about you. But no one knows that you know and you just get to continue.
Yeah.
That I feel like is the best, perhaps the best way that that movie could end in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think, like, eventually I'd probably try to escape, but for a couple years, if I found out, I feel like I'd be the kind of guy who just, like, subtly fuck with the producers and stuff.
Oh, yeah, you could totally fuck with the system. Oh, that'd be so fun.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be really fun.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that, like, I do think, yeah, I mean, like, Truman Show, they worked really hard to give him, like, a good life. Like, if I was on, if I turned out that I was on, like, Game of Thrones... And then, like, that shit wasn't real. And I found that out. I'd be like, oh, I'm fucking out of here. This sucks. I do not want to be here anymore. Yeah. But Truman Show was, like, pretty tight.
I would run for mayor. That's what I would do.
Oh,
because everyone would have to oblige. And then you would be mayor. The town, and then you could make whatever you want happen. And you could start fucking with... And they would be like, does she know? And then I would be like, I don't know. Do I know? I don't know.
You could be super corrupt with it, too. And, like, just, like, turn the town into, like, a racket. That'd be great.
Yeah, like single-handedly change the genre.
Because it's not real, so it's like there's no actual consequences.
I still don't know why in the Truman Show they placed it. They placed it in like present day, right? Or like the 50s.
Yeah, it was like present day of that time.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time. But like imagine if they did that and they like placed it in like the medieval times.
Yeah, they could have done a whole Westworld thing with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, they open up the doors, and he's just a savage.
But I guess for the people watching, it was, like, their version of Big Brother. It was, like, oh, it's just, like, watch someone live their life. How, wait a second, like, what about watching someone who thinks they're living their life, but, like, in the Wild West?
That is a better show.
A much better show.
Yeah.
I feel like,
guys, I'm stupid.
I feel like we just wrote an episode of The Twilight Zone.
I was like, are we doing this?
So... Couple more things I do want to get to, by the way, before we call it closing. And one of the things I wanted to mention, I have a request. And my request is based on something that you're going to have to explain a little bit, just for a few minutes. Chelsea, can you explain the Rattlers situation?
Yeah, I sure think so.
Okay.
So on a recent episode of what? Potentially the most recent episode, depending on when this is listened to. My topic was all about the history of like the U.S. Fire Service and basically how it used to be like a weird social club before it was like a nationalized service. And so if you were a cool dude in New Amsterdam/New York and you got invited to be part of the fire club, then you would go out and help people with fires. But the way that you did that was not that you would put out the fires for people. It was that if you saw...
Point at the fire.
Yeah, if you saw a fire, then you had this little, like, rattle, and you would rattle your rattle, like, in the street, like, ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. And then the other fire guy on, like, the next street over would hear your rattle, and then he would do his rattle, ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. And then all throughout the city, everybody be rattling. And then they'd be like, oh, there's a fire somewhere. And it was a perfect system and nothing was wrong with it.
Like the little beacons in Lord of the Rings, but for a fire on the street right next to you.
Right.
Yeah. They're like, but I think the idea was that you would wake everybody up and then they would, there was like an understanding that they would go like help their neighbors put the fire out because nobody else was coming.
It's a perfect ruse though, because it's like, I'm not going to fight the fire.
I'm going to shake
tell
my rattle.
There is one, and it's your job.
Yeah.
It's your job to fight the fire, but I'm just telling you, and you're welcome.
I feel like that
it
would
just
take
shows
too
you that
long.
There have been like dumb middleman services, you know, for hundreds of years.
So,
yeah.
You mentioned on the episode that you had an idea for like a comedy pilot where you'd have like Simon Pegg play one of the rattlers and stuff. And my one request is can you guys get Andy Serkis to play the fire?
Almost definitely. It's that's fascinating that you say that because we're already in talks with Andy Serkis to be the fire.
Perfect.
And he's excited about the project. He's excited about the physical task of representing fire, but also he because it's Andy Serkis. He's been sending us some camera tests, and I will tell you, they're very weird, but we're excited about the potential. And it's going to be great.
He's awesome. Been watching a lot of Backdraft and talking about how, like, you know, like fire talks to you and, you know, fire's unpredictable and has a mind of its own. And we're like, okay, Andy, like, whatever gets you there.
He's been micro dosing on lighter fluid.
Yeah.
All right, okay, so there's that.
I'm sorry, I was you put me deep into, like, I was just having a vision of it. And now I can't stop seeing it. I'm just like Andy Serkis in, like, a green, like, man suit, like, moving like fire. And I got in my own head for a second.
I'm the fire.
Yeah, I can see it. Yeah. Okay. Also, and Doplex, feel free to bring up anything else you want to bring up as well, because I have, like, one last major thing I want to get to.
I do have a question. Mm-hmm. How do you both feel about remote surgery on a banana?
I feel Say really more. Good about it.
Oh, okay. Cool. I wanted to know.
I All feel right. That if that had, you know, if that was, is that the best way, then we should all invest in that, and we should all agree that that's the best way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, 100%.
Ellie, what a safe fucking stance to take on such a controversial topic. Oh, you're wait, such a coward.
You should be a politician.
I guess I should probably elaborate on that a bit more.
Yeah, please do.
Just a little bit.
So they did a remote procedure on a banana, right? So, like, some dude in London, mm-hmm. a surgeon in London, did a surgery from London, but the banana. I should probably mention he did surgery on a banana, not a person. In California, so it's like a Zoom call Whoa. Of surgery, a surgery Zoom call.
Oh shit!
Yeah.
So how does that work? Like, so how does he move the little hand?
He can see it. I'm assuming he sees it on a screen.
I'm guessing, like, an Xbox 360 controller or something.
Yeah. I mean, have you guys ever looked at...
Yeah.
I think it's called the Da Vinci, the, like, robotic surgery thing.
Oh, is that what that's called?
And it's fucking sick, dude. Here's how I feel. I feel I'm going to take a strong stance, unlike Eleanor.
Please do. how rude.
You know I love you. The more people that you have in a surgery fucking around, wearing their little masks, like, to say nothing of, like, the current situation, just in a normal time, the more people you have putting their little grimy giant hands inside your body, like, the more trauma there is to all of the tissues, the longer it takes to heal, and the more complications there are. Robots, they can literally make, like, the tiniest incision you've ever seen.
But what if they leave a little pair of robot tweezers inside of you?
Oh, yeah.
I got bad news for you, Ellie. Real people leave much bigger things inside of you all the time.
Like a banana.
Yeah, like a banana. We've anyway. Come real circle.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm very pro-robot surgery. I'm pro-robots everything. I am down 100% to be, like, a little, like, robot bitch baby. Like, robots are better.
Robot
I am worse.
Let a robot mess around inside of my
This gut. Also brings up a really good thing, which is that we had a conversation recently. We had, like, you know, like, an outdoor, like, social distance, like, friend thing. And we all talked about, would we fuck a robot if, like, we get
to
that point where there's, like, human
that.
Kind of androids? Yeah, and Ellie was the only one that said she wouldn't fuck a robot. Ellie, elaborate.
I'm famously a prude.
Well, I mean, haven't we... I mean...
It's a robot.
I mean, but haven't humans been fucking robots since, like, the 70s?
I'm ready to be here in 2020. I'm ready to be here and say that I'm a prude. And I am frigid, and I don't like to be touched, and I will not fuck a robot. And I'm proud of myself.
All those things are just being British.
That's fair. Well,
but also, would you guys fuck a robot?
I mean, well, we discussed this on a recent episode. We talked about, like, if AI, like, but not just any AI, but, like, the AI that we know and love, like Alexa and Siri, if they came to life and were people, if we would fuck them.
Mm-hmm.
She knows too much.
Yeah, right, but that's the thing, though. Like, you know, that.
Or does she know just enough?
Yeah, because, like, you know, she's in your pocket all the time. She's always with you. You know, she sometimes she knows you better than you know yourself. And honestly, what more could you want in an artificial woman?
What about Clippy? Clippy from Word Art. Would you fuck?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Oh, 100%.
I'd fuck Bonzo, well, like, buddy.
That, wait, how would that work? Would you put your penis inside the gap, or would you put the clip like down? Yeah.
I know
you're
trying
urethra.
To penetrate me. Would you like
I was
some
say,
assistance?
See, I don't have that issue. Clippy is very phallic in
yeah.
nature.
Yeah.
Clippy would be like, "Hey, I'm not sure this is what you're looking for. Can I help you?"
It straightens out until like a point goes oh, up your God. Ass.
I mean,
no. So things like do you put it up the urethra at that point? Like, is that
oh,
where,
sounding
is that the,
with Clippy?
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
What? I feel like Clippy just wants to watch.
Yeah,
like if I know anything true. About Clippy,
I feel like sounding with Clippy should be the episode title. That's great.
Sounding with Clippy.
Like, credit to Microsoft, because they knew that we needed Clippy when we
yeah.
needed. There he is.
Yeah.
There, why is the paper pregnant?
Oh no. That's a rule 34 I didn't need to see.
TJ, you've awoken something in me tonight.
I mean, you know, more than one person is jacked off to Clippy's old face trying to help
sure.
you with your word.
Yeah, I'm mm-hmm. sure.
Some people just really like oh, so you were saying like don't talk about Alexa. I was going to say Alexa is the one that I would fuck, because I think we can all agree, like, unequivocally, Alexa is a sexy name.
Yeah.
Like, they knew what yeah. they were doing when they named it Alexa.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's a sexy name. Whereas the woman that voices Siri followed me on Twitter, and her username is Seriously Susan, and she just tweets at people and lets them know that she is the voice of Siri.
Nice.
And it's an energy. And she is not my type. And so therefore now I could not fuck Siri, because now that's in my head.
Well, I mean,
well, my Siri's a British man.
Yeah, I that's what I was going to say. Like, my Siri is an Australian man, and I'm very attracted
really?
To it. Yeah.
Oh, I should change that then.
Oh, yeah, you should.
Oh, yeah, Barack Obama sure. knows.
They should make it so that Andy Serkis can be Siri.
And fire at the same time.
Can you imagine a fire that helps you?
Yeah.
Mundane tasks.
Getting biblical now.
I could totally see a smart fireplace being a thing.
Do y'all remember that robot Sophia?
Yeah. Creepy fucking bitch.
Would you fuck Sophia the robot?
No, I don't like the weird, like, she's got no hair, and it's just like her entire, the back of her head is missing. She's just like a face.
That's true.
Like that.
I think,
who the hell is Sophia?
Oh, I love her. Yeah, I think her skin is like a little bit loose. It has like that
Chuck E. Cheese,
that like Men in Black, like Edgar suit vibe.
Oh,
a little bit.
She looks a little bit like, if you go really far backwards and you sort of squint your eyes a bit, she kind of looks like Gillian Anderson.
Yeah,
well, that
also,
is hot.
Also, like,
so that's
I think my opinion on that kind of changed before and after I saw. Why am I blanking on this? What's that? Ex Machina. That's the movie where it's like she kind of looks like the robot girl from Ex Machina. So I think I could deal with it at that point. But
pass it. You can figure it out.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know. I think they need to give her a head.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Doplex, you could get her a hat.
Yeah, I guess I could.
Aww,
all right, I'm changing my answer.
All right. Okay.
I'll fuck Sophia, the robot.
Okay.
All right, twist my arm.
All right, you convinced me.
So before we close things down, I wanted to do kind of like a short, like, 2-minute version of what you guys do on your podcast, which is I wanted to present a, like, a fun little incident in history.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Like, okay. A fact bang.
Okay.
It's going to take like 2 minutes to explain. Then we'll close down.
All right.
So, and I'm going to put it out there just in case you guys have discussed this. Have you guys talked about the corrupted blood incident?
What?
Ellie, did I? Blood? So I know what that is.
Okay.
And I think no, I don't think I did.
Okay.
Because we talked about, you're good. You're good to talk about it.
Okay. Let me take a sip of my drink. Doplex, can we get a transition song?
Oh, sure. Hold on. Let me grab my keyboard. Fuck. God damn it. All right. Okay. All right. I got it. Shit. God damn it. Fuck.
No, I didn't talk about it, because I did talk about emergent behavior in games, And I like briefly mentioned that it was a thing that happened, but I never did it as a topic. So okay. I'm super excited for you to talk about it.
Oh, perfect.
I am so intrigued.
All right. Well, let me play my transitional song. All right. There's not going to be any lyrics. Well, maybe there will be. We'll see.
That didn't sound that great on Discord, but that's fine.
All right, it'll be in the recording. It's fine.
Yeah, it's going to sound a lot better in post. Okay. So, in World of Warcraft, they have this game mode called The Raid. Thank you, Doblex. And so basically a raid is it's this thing where you get 24 other people to get into a group with you, and you guys all basically collectively bang your head against the wall for like several hours at night. It basically, or the equivalent of that, because you try to beat these bosses that are ridiculously difficult.
Right. And my friend Chad does this every week.
Yeah, and you're cooperating with like 24 other dipshits that like you can't follow basic instructions. But it's actually a lot of fun. Sometimes. Mm-hmm. And basically at one point in World of Warcraft, there is this new raid called Zol'Gurub, where there was a boss called Hakkar the Soul Flayer.
Can you use those in a sentence?
I faced the raid boss Hakkar the Soul Flayer.
Okay, thanks.
All right. So Hakkar the Soul Flayer had a debuff he could cast. A debuff in a video game, I'm just going to explain it for everyone, might as well, is basically it's this status effect on your character where over time you get damage or you're poisoned or you're paralyzed or something. And he had a debuff called Corrupted Blood. And basically you take continuous damage with Corrupted Blood until you move away from everyone else.
That's just another name for erectile dysfunction.
Sure. Let's go with that. So the erectile dysfunction bug happened because it was only supposed to last a few seconds. It was supposed to be confined to the raid zone. But there was a programming oversight where certain class of characters called hunters have pets that battle with you, and warlocks also have pets that they summon, the necromancy, to summon these demons. And they could actually keep those debuffs if they were unsummoned and then resummoned elsewhere. So it was only supposed to last a second, but there was the tiniest of programming oversights. And so what ended up happening is if your pet died or you just dismissed it during a battle, and then you took it out into the city where all the other players were, the buff could actually spread to the cities at that point.
No.
Like a pandemic?
Yeah, I'll get to that later.
Oh.
I'll get to that. I'm getting there.
Sorry, I wasn't trying to spoil.
No worries. And it's what was also really interesting is it could spread to NPCs. And NPCs, I'm not talking about in like the you know, conservative Snarl world. I'm talking about like actual non-playable characters, which are like quest givers, you know, innkeepers and stuff, just like, you know, the bankers and just all the computer characters. They could get it too, but it wouldn't do any damage to it. It's just that they could also spread it as well. So within like a day, the entire player base of World of Warcraft just died. And it was really interesting because, like, yeah, people go on the forums and they talk about seeing, like, hundreds of bodies lying in the streets of the towns and cities. And, like, everyone was, like, panicked and, like, getting on their mounts to go to, like, the obscure countryside and stuff. And it was, like, interesting, like, different people kind of did different things. Like,
like, this medieval plague in real time in their game.
Yeah, no joke. And like some of the healer classes, like the priests and paladins, would like set up shop where they were like constantly healing other players and stuff. And then there were also some like dirty dogs that would go find like low level players and try to grief them and stuff. And it was really interesting to see, because what ended up happening was an actual pandemic in the game.
Whoa.
And I think it's kind of interesting to think about today, because there have actually been a lot of researchers that have compared this incident to COVID-19.
No.
Because it's one of those situations where, like, the NPCs were asymptomatic carriers. And so you have a situation where people who don't know that they have the disease are spreading the disease. And you also have different people who are, you have your dirty dogs today who are not really necessarily intentionally spreading it, but just being kind of like an asshole about the mask right. situation, social distancing and stuff. So it's like, they're the idiots that would have spread the disease in the game. And so we see just like so many parallels to this weird quirk of programming back in, I think, the early 2000s in World of Warcraft to COVID-19.
Huh. That's incredible.
Thank you.
I might be mistaken, but wasn't there also like that it was worse for lower level players than like, because it was doing like a constant sort of like low level damage. So if you had higher HP, you might be able to last longer or like, you know, go do something. Whereas like if you were a low level character, because you weren't supposed to be able to do that raid at all anyway.
Yeah.
Then you would just get fucked. And so I remember reading something about like the similar to COVID-19 that like higher level characters started offering to like do things or like help out lower level characters because they were like, if they had corrupted blood, they were just like, couldn't even, their game became like unplayable basically.
Yeah. I think I think the maximum HP was somewhere, I'm probably going to get this wrong. Someone will let me know in the comments. I think it was like 10,000 in that era I think it was BC. And then like, but like, if you're a low level character, I think it was like 300 damage a tick. So you just die. So
fuck. Oh, no. That sucks so bad.
Well, yeah. In the spirit of what, let me jump in and say that you get 10 points for that story just off the bat. Really enjoyed it. That was incredible. Oh, I'm going to minus 2 points because I feel bad for all the people of the lower levels that had to die.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give you 3 points back because you incorporated Chelsea, my co-host's favorite kind of story, which is a story that emerges in an MMO. So congratulations. You win this episode of What That's Not an Episode of What.
All right. Good job, cool. Lars. I'm proud of you, man. Yeah. That was great.
Dope, really you got good. One for us?
A story?
Yeah.
I can
give a little fact bang.
I can Google one really quick.
No, I meant to have one prepared for these lovely ladies.
Oh. I mean, I can give you a song. That's my art of storytelling.
You know what? You get 7 points right off the bat.
Hell yeah.
Because I can't, wow. I can't wow. do a song.
I had to tell like this amazing story just to get 10. And he gets 7, not even having done his at all.
But he does lose 4 points because...
He lied.
Because you lied, because you're a liar.
All right.
We're just trying to give people a taste for how our points work.
This song is about Lars and a homeless man at Taco Bell.
Not this again.
Yes, give it to me.
Lars and the homeless man. They met and they fell in love. Then they had sex in the Taco Bell parking lot. Thank you.
That
was it.
Oh man, 8 points. Loved it.
Thank you.
Well, so apparently this system is completely capricious and the points mean nothing. So
correct. Yeah, the stories are real, but the points are fake.
It's all about presentation.
I will say though, Delplex, I will give you 500 points and you will be the reigning champion of our show.
Oh.
If you can write a song about Daddy Biden on the spot.
Make a song about Daddy Biden?
Daddy Biden.
I could do that. Hold on. All right. I need to find a good, sultry, sexy instrumental here.
You saw the photo of Daddy Biden that I posted in the chat, right?
An instrument that has a beard, if you could.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Nat, of course.
All right. Here we go. Daddy Biden. Daddy Biden. You're looking pretty sexy with those follicles on your face. Yeah, 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 yeah. You're our president and you have a beard. And that's kind of cool. Obama smoked menthols and you have a beard. I love a quirky president. Is that good?
You know what?
Yeah.
I'll give it to you.
Cool.
He did it.
It's cool. I love a quirky president.
I love a quirky president. Look, he's quirky. Okay, he falls down a lot.
500 points. You win the first year of what? How do you feel?
Thank you. I feel amazing. Honestly, it's like one of those things you didn't know you wanted until you got it, and now you know that it's been something you've been searching for your whole life.
I can't wait to explain to our listeners what happened on our next episode. What?
Oh yeah, can you guys please make this canon on your show? Because like that.
Oh, 100%. Oh, yeah. We will.
Please.
Yeah. We're gonna be like, what happened was.
What happened?
It was Friday night. I was three claws in. I asked this guy to write a song about Daddy White.
Also, you got to include a part about how Lars told a good story.
Well, like, no, don't you just give all that glory.
Yeah,
you don't
100%. Lars, that was so good.
You do.
Also, I did just remember that it's Saturday.
Completely cucked by Daddy Biden.
Oh, no, you did. You worked so hard and you researched that.
To be fair, I did put that together like 5 minutes before the show.
So come on, like, Lars. You don't have to lie. Come on. I know you've been working really on that all week.
Okay, well, 3 minutes. Sorry.
Sound like it.
Really? Oh, no. I'm just a good storyteller.
All right. Well, brag about it.
Okay. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Allie, should we be like storytellers?
No.
I don't know. We're not boy, so I don't know if we can do it.
We can just do our thing, which is like, we're ladies and we just tell fun, cute stories.
Just ladies gossiping.
Yeah. That's kind of what this podcast is. Just a couple ladies gossiping. Right, Lars?
Just a couple ladies gossiping about like world history.
Yeah.
As if we get a say.
Wait, you're asking if that's what our show is like, Duplex? Last week we talked for like 30 minutes on foreskin.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it needs to be discussed.
Yeah,
I'm so glad that you guys are out here, the first guys talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Godfathers of the medium.
I came up with an idea for a spinoff called The Forecast, you know, like weather forecast, but it's a podcast dedicated to foreskins.
Oh, nice. But foreskins. Ooh. Yeah.
I do like that.
Thank you.
That's nice. And like how it might change weather to weather.
Yeah. All right.
I like that.
I mean, I'm here to go on the record and say I'm fascinated by foreskin. As someone who's
like
never
just
had
stare
it.
At it in awe? Like, what do you mean?
No.
Who's never
as
had
someone
it.
Who has
like
never had
gold.
It. And also, okay, like, here's the truth. I'm going to get really vulnerable with you guys for a second because I know you want to end this podcast and I'm not allowing it to happen. I know mathematically I have to have encountered a penis with foreskin at this point in my sluttiness.
Okay.
But because they're always already, shall we say, primed by the time I get to them,
uh-huh.
I haven't actually encountered it.
Oh.
So it is sort of like a white whale for me, a pink whale.
Right, right. So what you need is someone with two of them.
Two foreskins?
Yeah. So it's like, you know, it takes longer to prime.
I see. Yeah, because I've seen that in porn where, it's so long that it extends past like the glands, which I'm also fascinated by.
That just sounds like more of like a trench coat than like a
no, it
jacket,
looks like a turtleneck. You know? It like goes past it.
Right.
Like a full,
I love
like
it. This is, I want to be very clear. I am celebrating men's bodies right now. Like I am so fascinated by it. I have not gotten to experience it in real life.
Thank you. I appreciate you celebrating men's bodies.
I do celebrate men's bodies. No one else does.
Attention.
And I feel like it's my, I feel like
exactly.
I get to be the only one. I feel like society's always bringing
honest,
men's
that's
bodies
why
down.
We started our podcast is that we wanted to get to this point.
Also, like the main difference when it comes to foreskin, by the way, is on the guy's side. Like, there's no mechanical differences, so it's like if you experience it, you're gonna be like, oh, all right.
Well, I know. Yeah,
that is a glowing review.
That was foreskin.
Oh, all right.
Barack Obama is in the chat just absolutely trashing me.
Oh.
And I guess
oh,
it's
no.
because I've been talking about Daddy Biden this whole time. And I get
Maybe.
It. It's fine.
He's like, that's my assistant. Go fuck.
I think Barack Obama did have a question. I think I saw earlier that he did have a question.
Do you have a question, Barack Obama?
Barack Obama.
Also,
he had his 8 years to talk. It's that's enough.
Well, that's, he didn't right. have the Congress. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh man.
By the way, not trying to close out or anything, but does anyone have anything else they want to get to?
Oh no, I'm getting deported. Well,
I think we did it.
So guys,
I think we done did it.
We did the damn thing.
I think we did the thing.
You know, 2020 is a year of surviving, and we're doing our best. But
that's true.
If you want to listen to what, please do. It's a fun time, and Chelsea and I just have a great time and chat shit back and forth for an hour every week, and it's fun. It's a little bit of chaos in your pocket.
Yeah, please plug all your stuff, both of you. Plug it all.
I'll plug it.
Oh.
Well, Ellie, you were plugging. Do you want to continue? Shit, do you want to finish your plug?
Nope. I think she's gone.
No. Okay. No. So please.
We enjoy it.
Oh, Ellie, you just cut out for like a minute.
Then no one will ever know.
Oh.
So what comes out every Wednesday on every podcast platform? It is always something, it is always at least one, but often two or three fun, new, interesting topics. Hopefully that you've never heard before. Maybe if you have heard it, it's going to be a new take on it that you've never heard. There's also a lot of the kind of just silly girl banter that you've gotten to hear a little bit on this podcast that we were so grateful to be invited to. So thank you guys so much for having us on the show.
Thank you guys so much. This was
super fun.
I'm sorry for my audio issues.
It is all good. You two have been absolutely delightful, and we appreciate you coming on and talking Daddy Biden and foreskin with us, and all the other philosophical stuff.
And I hope you guys will come on at some point and share some more of your wisdom and songs.
We'll talk. We'll think about it.
Wow.
I mean, I'm saying yes. Lars is the prude here.
Welcome to my side of the court. It's lonely here.
Ellie, do you want to plug like your social? Because I know that you have a lot of, like, we were talking about the projects that we're working on.
So my you can follow me at Ellie Main on Instagram and Ellie Main on Twitter. I'm working on a show in Chelsea. It's a really fun comedy show called Fed that we're trying to get off the ground. And then
And then she's working on a show with Christina Parrish.
Worked. What did I cut out again?
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
I'm so sorry. I'm working on a show with Christina Parrish, a comedian in Austin, who also used to work for Rooster Teeth. She's funny as hell. And we're making a show about her quitting her job because her dog Veronica should be an influencer. We're raising funds for that, and we're going to shoot it next year. So watch this space. It's going to be a lot of fun, and you can hear lots about that on WhatPod2.
All right.
I cannot wait for that.
And you can see me tweet at Daddy Biden at Chelsea Harfouche wherever internets are sold. It's definitely the same. It's similar. It's a similar energy.
Yeah.
I guess if you want to see that interview that we did with Ninja at my day job, then I'll tweet about that as well. So that's my plug.
Oh, by the way, Chelsea, I think people could probably guess how to spell Chelsea. I'm going to give you a chance to spell your last name on air.
That's fair. So that's we always make this joke on what is that the one nice thing about having like an ethnic name, and then also specifically having like a white girl first name and then a Lebanese last name, is that my name is always available on every social platform. So on every social platform you can find me at Chelsea Chelsea Harfouche Harfouche.
All right, Doplex, awesome. Tell them about YouTube.
If you're listening to this on YouTube, make sure you subscribe, and also make sure to check out our Patreon for a bunch of exclusive stuff. That's patreon.com/T1podcast. If you don't go there, I'll be very fucking pissed. I swear to God, if you don't head over there right now, you're gonna get it, mister. Daddy Biden's gonna come for that ass. Ooh. Ooh.
Thank you guys so much for having us. This has been a blast.
thanks for coming on.
Yeah, seriously. You two have been fantastic.
I'm dabbing, you can't see it.
Chelsea, can you take us out?
With a gun.
Yeah. Yeah, with a gun. Exactly. No, we always, I always take it out with my favorite little like prayer saying, which comes from KR Ghost Host, a woman who claims to be possessed by celebrities. And one time on TikTok, she was possessed by Elvis. And Elvis said, okay, keep it loose, keep it tight, say your prayers at night. And it was incredible. That's how I'll take you out.
Well, thank you. I wasn't expecting that, but I don't know what else I was expecting, so I appreciate
it. Oh,
that.
It's the best. Side note, she also did one where she was, oh God, what's his name? The crocodile hunter?
Oh, Steve Irwin?
Steve Irwin. Steve Irwin? She was the ghost. She was possessed by the ghost of Steve Irwin, and he was sending a message to Tiger King, and he was like, yes, what's up with this Tiger King? He's stealing all my thunder. You're making it more popular than I did. And it was just like a massive misunderstanding of Tiger King.
Incredible.
<It's> so good.
Anyway. You guys have any questions before we get started?
Are there any no-go zones?
No.
I mean,
other than like, you know, obvious human being ones.
Yeah, just like no hard racial slurs. You should be fine. Like, just keep it to a minimum.
Only soft ones.
That's so our brand.
God, I'm gonna have to go. It's my whole thing.